But twice a day, between sessions with physical therapists and occupational therapists and massage therapists and tests and all the rest, Brunn took her out to the stable yard. That was her reward for a good morning, incentive for a good afternoon. She learned each horse's voice and the voices of the stable hands only a few days later. Brunn poured handfuls of sweet feed into her passive hand, and she felt the soft velvet horse lips mumbling over her palm. Brunn lifted her hands and laid them against satiny necks and shoulders. The first time her fingers really moved, it was along a horse's shoulder. Her first strong grasp was of a horse's mane. And yet she hated the obviousness of it. She did not want her love of horses to be so utilitarian, so selfish. They deserved her love for themselves, not because it could help her therapy. She would have sulked, except how could she sulk when she couldn't talk at all? How could she rage when her movements were slow and awkward and she couldn't scream?
Cecilia Free.
Harris held that thought in mind as she laid out the roundabout safe course from their present location to the Guerny Republic. It had to be Brunn's plan. She told herself that the villains in this piece had no reason to abscond with Cecilia. Only her friends did. Only Brunn could have put together the resources to do it. She imagined Cecilia in Cerealis. It was easy to imagine her in rooms Harris had seen, around horses and people she knew. Obvious, of course, to the king and anyone else, but she put it out of her mind. Brunn had acted. The first part had gone well. She could do nothing herself until she'd delivered these clones and the prince, if he was one of them.
Then I'll find Cecilia.
Somewhat to Harris's surprise, the rest of the trip to the Guerny Republic went peacefully, jump point after jump point, day after day after day. The three clones, each of whom insisted he was not the prince, were less trouble than Ronnie and George had been at first. They agreed to wear name tags to help the crew avoid the confusion of offering a meal to a clone who had already eaten. This helped, although it occurred to Harris that they might switch the name tags for a lark. Harris could not assess their intelligence, not with the possibility, no likelihood, that they would not cooperate and perform at their best. Yet they seemed to have more common sense than she'd expected.
There's no use our pretending with all three of us here. Our cover's blown totally as far as you and the others aboard this ship are concerned. You know we're clones of the prince, and you know what that means legally. It wouldn't matter if one of us were the prince. The damage has already been done.
You mean we're now a danger to the prince? Or to the crown?
No, we are. After all, that cruiser captain knows. Some of his crew either know or suspect. There's no way to be sure the secret's safe, even if they silenced you. They'll probably dump us.
Petrus put down his fork.
Kill you?
No, there are other ways. They can do a plastic surgery to make us no longer doubles, and there's some kind of way to mark our genomes more prominently. Look through the microscope and the chromosomes spell clone.
Harris wondered if their calmness was part of their act.
But what will you do? Have you had any...
Job training? No, we just laze around acting like silly-ass rich boys. Some. We've had lots of courses and all sorts of things he's supposed to know. Of course, we don't attend formal classes or get degrees, but I'm sure they'll cobble up some sort of resume for us.
They seemed remarkably unconcerned, but they were, Harris reminded herself, 20 or more years younger than she. People that age had more confidence than their lack of experience warranted. Except for Sirkin. Something was wrong, and Harris couldn't quite figure it out. Of course, she would still be grieving for Amelie. That might be it. She had seen violent death up close for the first time in her life, and the victim was someone she loved. But Harris had seen other young people deal with their first serious losses. Usually they came back to normal in fits and spurts, but with an upward trend. Sirkin had seemed to be recovering normally, but then took a downward turn. Harris didn't expect her to be lively, happy, or full of the sparkle that had first convinced her the girl was a good prospect, but she did expect consistent good work at her job, and that's where Sirkin had begun to fail. Only little things so far, a missing log entry after a course change, a data cube left out on the counter rather than filed in its case. Harris had been tactful at first, murmuring reminders when she found the data cube, noticed the missing entry. Sirkin had looked appropriately remorseful and made quick corrections. But it went on. The other crew had noticed.
I don't care what your problem is, Bright Eyes, but if you don't shape up, the captain will kick your tail off this ship the next port we come to. It's not like you can't do better. We know you can. And don't tell me it's grieving over Irulan, because we could tell you were really falling for Brune.
Harris paused, just out of sight. Perhaps Oblo could do better at unkinking Sirkin than she had so far.
But I did tell you. I did log the jump coordinates. I entered them shift before last.
They're not here. And Issy was on just after you. Are you telling me he wiped your log entry?
No, I don't know. I know I made that entry. I went over it twice because I know I've been making mistakes somehow. It was there, I swear.
Don't bother. You don't know how. See here, girl. You have only two possibilities. Either you didn't enter anything or someone wiped it. Now, I know damn well Issy wouldn't wipe it. Nor would I, nor would the captain. Who are you accusing? You think one of those clones sneaked in here?
I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I was so careful, and then it's gone.
I've got to tell the captain. You know that. I can't pretend not to notice something like that. It could kill us all later.
I know that. I can't explain it.
Harris shook her head and went on in. Sirkin looked tired and unkempt. That was new. She had always been neatly groomed and bright-eyed. What could be wrong with the girl?
Miss Sirkin, I'll see you in my office, please.
She did not miss the desperate look Sirkin threw at Oblo, who gave her no encouragement at all.